Greetings in the name of Jesus this morning. The Son of the Creator. It's a beautiful drive again, coming down through and seeing the progression of spring that you'll have a little bit ahead of us. And it only makes sense for us to lift up our voices in praise to our Almighty Creator. But I'm not sure why. Sitting here this morning, I thoroughly enjoyed singing, but I don't know why I had to think of the words that Samuel said to Saul. He said, but to obey is better than sacrifice. Sacrifice was the way that they praised God in the Old Testament. And we can do, it is important that we praise God with our lips, but to obey is even better than this. And I hope that somehow, is my hope, my burden this morning, that after, through the time of our sharing around the Word, we can find inspiration to obey and to follow the Lord. This morning, I would like to draw some principles for life today from an Old Testament story, and we're going to get there after a little bit. I'd like to think about a life of faith this morning, or living a life of faith, or leading a life of faith, however you want to call it. I choose the word leading because we have to make choices in the walk of faith. We cannot say that we live a life of faith without making choices. It does not just come floating down and rest upon us one day that we live a life of faith. And we already talked about choosing faith in our Sunday school hour a bit. The life of faith is only manifest, or it's only made aware, or people can only see it because people of faith choose that life. And we can only look at the example of Abraham or Moses or Joshua and say, oh, they just lived a wonderful life of faith. But it's because they took choices, they made choices. And so we want to see examples of how we can choose to live that, the way we can be seen and remembered by our life of faith. What are you people going to remember me by? What are they going to remember you by one day? Is it going to be by the latest vehicles that we drove, or the empire, the business empire that we have built, or you fill in the blank, or will they remember us because of the life of faith, the legacy that we leave? Actually, in a lot of ways, saying leading a life of faith is kind of a paradox, because we got to choose, but yet we have to be led. We have to lead out, but yet we have to follow. I guess it's the Christian life the way it is. But this morning, the only way that we can choose a life of faith is if we have found ourselves surrendering. And I just want to read, you don't need to turn there, but if you wish, you may, to 918 in your hymn books. When I was studying, I had to think of this song, All to Jesus I Surrender. We cannot live the life of faith without surrender. I guess I already said that, but you cannot separate it. If you're not a cross bearer this morning, if you're not bearing the cross of Jesus Christ, you're not going to be surrendered. And if you're not surrendered, well, I guess we've got to be surrendered to bear the cross. They're kind of two in one and the same. But we're not going to choose faith. All to Jesus I surrender, all to him I freely give. I will ever love and trust him, in his presence daily live. All to Jesus I surrender, humbly at his feet I bow. Worldly pleasures all forsaken, take me, Jesus, take me now. All to Jesus I surrender, make me Savior wholly thine. May the Holy Spirit fill me, may I know thy power divine. All to Jesus I surrender, Lord, I give myself to thee. Fill me with thy love and power, let thy blessing fall on me. Judson Van Deventer, I don't even know how to say his name. The little bit, which is only a little bit that I know about him, was he had the opportunity to be a star in life, in his life, of being a teacher of art. He was very artistic, and he could have went on and become a leading teacher, a master in his field. But when the Lord got a hold of him and changed him into evangelist, that's when he wrote the song, that is all to Jesus I surrender. He had abilities that he could have been much good to this earth, to this world. But he surrendered all to Jesus. Turn to 2 Kings chapter 3. There's many examples. If we were going to look and consider a life of faith, there's many examples we could turn to. Actually, probably ones that are better than this. But there are ingredients or little details in this story that I see parallels in this walk, in this life. And in a lot of ways, in some ways, you're going to see this story is not ideal because there's people in this story that have flaws. There's people in the story that have shortcomings. Yes, there's even people in the story that are wicked people. But I guess it gives me a little comfort as I see how God worked with them. Not that I want to lead a wicked life, but that even the human, even the most human of beings, the most normal beings, can lead a life of faith. I'm going to read the almost the entire story, verses 1 to 25. And we're going to look at four or five practical areas. 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 1. Now Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria, the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 12 years. And he wrought evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father and like his mother, for he put away the image of Baal that his father had made. Nevertheless, he cleaved unto the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which made Israel to sin. He departed not therefrom. Amasa, king of Moab, was a sheepmaster, and rendered unto the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with the wool. But it came to pass, when Ahab was dead, that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. And King Jehoram went out of Samaria the same time and numbered all Israel. And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, the king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Wilt thou go with me against Moab to battle? And he said, I will go up. I am as thou art. My people is thy people, and my horses as thy horses. And he said, which way shall we go up? And he answered, the way through the wilderness of Edom. So the king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom. And they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey. And there was no water for the hosts, and for the cattle that followed them. And the king of Israel said, alas, that the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. But Jehoshaphat said, is there not here a prophet of the Lord that we may inquire of the Lord by him? And one of the king of Israel's servants answered and said, here is Elisha, the son of Shaphat, which poured water on the hands of Elijah. Jehoshaphat said, the word of the Lord is with him. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Edom, went down to him. And Elisha said unto the king of Israel, what have I to do with thee? Get thee to the prophets of thy father and to the prophets of thy mother. And the king of Israel said unto him, nay, for the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. And Elisha said, as the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, surely, were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee. But now bring me a minstrel. And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. And he said, thus saith the Lord, make this valley full of ditches. For thus saith the Lord, ye shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain. Yet that valley shall be filled with water that ye may drink, both ye and your cattle and your beasts. And this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. He will deliver the Moabites also into your hand. And ye shall smite every fenced city and every choice city, and shall fell every good tree, and stop all wells of water, and mar every good piece of land with stones. And it came to pass, in the morning, when the meat offering was offered, that, behold, there came water by the way of Edom, and the country was filled with water. And when all the Moabites heard that the kings were come up to fight against them, they gathered all that were able to put on armor and upward, and stood in the border. And they rose up early in the morning, and the sun shone upon the water, and the Moabites saw the water on the other side as red as blood. And they said, this is blood. The kings are surely slain, and they have smitten one another. Now therefore, Moab, to the spoil. And when they came to the camp of Israel, the Israelites rose up and smote the Moabites, so that they fled before them. But they went forward, smiting the Moabites, even in their country. And they beat down the cities on every good piece of land, cast every man his stone, and filled it. And they stopped all the wells of water and felled all the good trees. Only in Kirhoseth left they stones thereof. Howbeit, the slingers went about it and smote it. We'll stop there. I only thought of it too late that perhaps this is unnecessary because y'all have chosen a step of faith to, at one degree or another, to come to this area. But nevertheless, there may be some pointers or some truths here for us from here forward. Just because y'all, in your own way, have taken a step of faith to come here to the Winchester area does not mean that God is done with your walk of faith. This is a lifetime, but we want to see this story. I see it, first of all, as an inspiration in my life, but then also as a very direct challenge as we're walking this walk. Now back to the story. The story starts with a nation or a group of people that were called Moabites. We already read that. And they're rebelling against an order that had been put in place probably 150 years earlier by King David. He had put this order in place, this thing of, which verse was it now? Verse 4, where it says that the king of Moab rendered unto the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams. Now that's a number I can't comprehend how many acres of grass that may have covered just for this little, not this little flock, this huge flock. Anyhow, he rendered this to the king of Israel. And that is because 2 Samuel, I'll just read 2 Samuel 8 and verse 2, and he smote, I think it's talking about David, King David, and he smote Moab and measured them with a line, casting them down to the ground. Even with two lines measured he to put to death, and with one full line to keep alive, and the Moabites became David's servants and brought gifts. So from that day forward, the Moabites need to bring a gift. And I believe, as far as I can tell, it's that this verse 4, they brought all these sheep and these lambs and these rams as a gift to the king of Israel. And this went on for many years until King Ahab died. And the king of Moab said, all right, it's enough. We're done giving Israel these gifts. And Ahab's son Ahaziah, who only reigned 2 years after Ahab died, didn't do anything about it. He didn't take charge of the situation. He left it go. This gift was no longer coming. But when Jehoram, which was another son of Ahab, came up in his place, this is when, for whatever reason, he numbered Israel and he said, all right, it's time to deal with these rebellious Moabites. And I suppose after he numbered, he felt like they did not have quite enough power. That's why he called on the king of Judah. He called on Jehoshaphat and said, hey, come on over and help us. I need all the resources that we can get. And Jehoshaphat said there in verse 7, he said, I will go up. I am as thou art. My people's thy people. My horses thy horses. He said, whatever I have, you can use. We'll help you go after Moab. And they decided to go up through the wilderness of Edom. And as they went up through Edom, they latched onto the king of Edom and his people. So now we have a group of three kings. They're making this journey to the land of Moab. I'm not sure exactly what is meant here in verse 9, where it says they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey. I don't know if they were going to make a whole ring around the country of Moab, or if they planned that this was going to take 7 days. I don't know exactly what that meant, but this was going to be at least a week-long journey to bring this group into the land. But we have a problem in verse 9. Last part of the verse. There was no water for the host and for the cattle that followed them. The Bible uses the word host. So this was not just 150 men with a few cattle with them. This was a host. And we have a problem because there is no water. This wilderness of Edom is apparently dry and there was no water for them or the cattle. And you can see the fear that came in the king of Israel's heart. Verse 10, he said, alas, the Lord hath got all three of us together, all three kings and our hosts, just to bring us into this wilderness and deliver us into the hand of Moab. This group was what I call they're becoming parched and powerless. I never went very long at all without water. I don't know how long. I did not even look into it, but I know it's not very long that the human body can go without water. And so we know that this was for real. Without water, they would eventually die, but even before that, they would lose strength, they'd be faint, and they'd be powerless in front of the enemy. At this point, Jehoshaphat says in verse 11, isn't there a prophet of the Lord around here that we can ask what we should do? Remember, Jehoshaphat was, no, we'll find that out later, but Ahaziah was wicked, and I don't know that the king of Edom was a righteous man, but Jehoshaphat was. And so his thoughts went to the Lord right away. Isn't there a prophet of the Lord that we can inquire and find out what we should do? And so Elisha was found, and he came on the scene, and he looked up, he sized up the situation, and he said, were it not, verse 14, he said, I wouldn't even look at you, he said to the king of Israel, in my words, he said, I wouldn't even look at you or consider your situation except that Jehoshaphat, who is a godly king, is here with you. And I regard his presence. He said, I respect Jehoshaphat. And if it weren't for him, I wouldn't even look at you. I wouldn't even pay any attention to your plight, to your situation, because you all are wicked. So verse 15, he called for a minstrel to come and play. And I know this is kind of off the subject. I know it's off the subject, but he needed to have some quiet time. He needed to have some music played so that he could think. And so sometimes I believe it's okay for you to turn on the music or to sing a song, and you can get your thoughts. The Spirit can work through those times, because we see the Spirit did right here. And so when that minstrel played, that the hand of the Lord came upon Elisha at that point, and then he had his word for them. Verse 16, he says, here's what the Lord said. Go and dig this valley full of ditches. Make this valley full of ditches. So that obviously we know a few things. They were in a valley, and it wasn't all trees everywhere, because they could dig ditches in this valley. And he said in verse 18, this is just a small thing. This is but a light thing. This is just a tiny thing for the Lord to do. He's going to fill these ditches full of water, and he will deliver the Moabites into your hand. Remember, they had a plight. Right now, they needed water. Worse than anything else, all of a sudden, how we're going to conquer the Moabites was kind of down a little lower on the list, because we're not even going to live. We've got to live first before we can conquer the Moabites. And so it was. They dug the valley full of ditches. They listened to the Lord. I'm going to get ahead of myself, but they stepped out in faith and dug these ditches. And the Lord filled these ditches with water the next morning. And the Moabites had heard about their coming, and they were on the border, I'm assuming, up on an elevated area facing the east, I picture. Because when the sun came up and the sun's glare across these ditches made it look like blood, that this valley, which was full of water for Israel and Edom and Judah and their cattle, became and looked. It was an optical illusion, we say, to the army of the Moabites. The Moabites were so sure that these three kings that they caught wind of that were coming had gotten a disagreement, and they'd done slain each other. And so that's why they say, up Moab to the spoil. I see that as a charge command, to the spoil. They were given the command by their leader to charge into this encampment and just collect all the good things they could find. To the spoil. Spoil meaning there was treasures, there was things that they could have that could be benefited by. So we know the rest of the story. They went on down in there, but like we know already, it was an optical illusion. And they were smitten. The Moabites were smitten. Now, what parallels are here for us? I have five of them. Number one, faith leads out in decisions because of its goal. Our faith is nothing if we don't have a goal. And we know the walk of faith has a goal, the eternal goal. And so faith leads out in decisions because of its goal. Here in this story, they chose the path they were going to take because of their goal. And what was their goal? Their goal was to go after Moab, the Moabites, and bring judgment because they disobeyed. So that was their goal, and they banded together. They chose their path to their destination, and their goal was to get to and conquer the army of Moab. In the life of faith, in the walk of faith, decisions are always made with a goal in focus. Are always made with a goal in focus. Is there a decision too small? Is there ever a decision too small to allow the kingdom of God to affect it? I'm sure there's decisions that are not really affected by the life of faith. But I'm thinking of when it's time for me to go out and replace a vehicle because it's broken down. Can the goal, the heavenly goal, does it affect it? Does it affect if you're going to upgrade your phone every year, every 6 months, like your carrier wants you to? Is your goal going to affect if you need to add on to your house, or how you're going to add on to your house, or how you're going to do the landscaping around your place, or if you should expand your business? Is it going to affect what occupation you choose? It sure will. I know of examples where a person's goal determined that they were not going to take treatment for their cancer, for example, because they knew where they were in life, or for whatever reason they chose, because they wanted to get their reward. They knew that they did not have anything in this life, in this earthly body. I'm not saying cancer treatment is wrong, it's not what I'm saying, but they used their goal, the heavenly reward, to impact that. My point is, there's not an area in our lives or decisions that a focus on the heavenly goal will not affect. There's maybe too many negatives. Every decision in life must be affected by our heavenly goal. If we are truly surrendered, our faith will lead out in decisions because of its goal. Number two, there are times in the life of faith and the walk of faith that the response of faith is only worship. God gave this host orders to dig ditches, and he would do the rest. He gave them direction. But you know what God left out of this whole picture? He didn't tell them when he was going to fill these ditches. Do you see anywhere in the story where God said, "You dig the valley full of ditches, and within 30 minutes, I will have them full of water"? No, he did not. So when was he going to fill these ditches? As near as I can tell in this story, they dug the ditches one day, and they went to bed. They were thirsty when they dug the ditches. The cattle were thirsty when they dug the ditches, but they went to bed. Because it wasn't until the next morning that God filled the ditches with water. God could have filled these ditches while they were sleeping. He could have filled them, like I said, within 30 minutes after they got dug. He could have filled them as they were digging them. You know, when the children of Israel went across the Red Sea, God created this great wind to blow, and it blew it dried a path for Israel. But then when they got to the Jordan to cross to go into the Promised Land, he made those priests wait until their feet had touched the water before he parted the waters of the Jordan. So God doesn't always do things, well, we know he doesn't do things according to our timeline. And he does things a variety of ways. So why didn't he fill those ditches with water? Why did he wait till the next morning? They didn't know then, and we don't know today, why he chose to fill those ditches the next morning. We don't know today either. But we do know this. He chose to do it in his own time. For whatever reason, he chose not to do it in the timeline that made sense to man. And that was quite all right because he was our creator. He is our creator. When God chooses to answer us, to show us where to go, or to supply our needs, he may do it in his own timeline. He does not need to choose to do it in our timeline. This group likely woke up just as thirsty as when they went to bed. Remember, they were thirsty, they were worried, they were concerned, they were fearful about their plight because they were thirsty. There was no water, and they were powerless before the enemy. They went to bed thirsty, and they got up thirsty. The cattle that were bawling for a drink were just as noisy the next morning as they were when they went to bed. Maybe they didn't even sleep. Maybe the cattle were bawling all night because they were thirsty. Maybe too many of you are removed from agriculture, but perhaps some of you know what it's like to have thirsty cattle and the racket that animals will make when they're thirsty. So what do I do? I have a need. What do you do when you have a need and you're praying about it and you're reaching out in faith and God is just not moving when you think he should? Do you cry out and say, God, where are you? I mean, can't you see I have this plight? Don't you see I have this need? Where are you anyhow? You tell me in your word that you love me, but why aren't you leading out? Maybe you never have thoughts like that. We've got a problem. We have a problem and we need answers now, not tomorrow, not next week. We need an answer now, is what we say, was our human side says. They could have said, Lord, we've done exactly what you told us to do. We dug this valley full of ditches. Now, when are you going to answer? We have followed. When are you going to answer? You know, when I cry out like that, it's when I've not surrendered all. When I've not bowed my will to the Father. When I get those rebellious type of questions, I guess that's the way I would call it. When we say, why, God? They could have done that in this case. Well, my point is, at times, the response of faith is only worship. What else could they do? They could not pull out. They did not pull out their smartphone and go on Google Maps and discover that those with satellite view right across the ridge was a body of water, a 10-acre lake. They couldn't do that. It wasn't there anyhow, but that's what we do. We try and find situations sometimes by ourselves, but no, these people were stuck. What did they do? They worshiped. They sacrificed. There was nothing else they could do. They were powerless to move forward because they were out of water. They had no physical power to move forward and to go on after Moab, but they worshiped. I just think it's such a beautiful thing. There it is, verse 22. No, it's not. I didn't write down the verse. Verse 20. And it came to pass in the morning when the meat offering was offered that, behold, there came water by the way of Edom. Only when they worshipped did God supply their needs. Rather than running ourselves out of energy and trying to find solutions, let's get to the point where we are just where he says, be still and know that I am God. Shut everything else off and worship. When Israel worshipped, number three, the pathway became clear. And so it is for me. The pathway becomes clearer during times of worship. These ditches got filled with water. I suppose with the way the story has gone that God filled these ditches in a way they never expected. He said it wasn't going to rain. They're not going to hear the sound of water. Likely came from a completely different way than what they expected. God gave them hope. This water gave them hope. When God gives us direction, he gives us hope. They still weren't at their goal, just like we aren't at our goal yet. But every step, every confirmation that we get that we are doing the will of God, it gives us hope to press on and keep moving. Water gave them hope, but their mission wasn't accomplished. Moab was still alive and well, and there was still a battle that they wanted to win. There was still a battle that God said he was going to deliver them into their hands. They had seen the part where the ditches got filled, but they did not see yet how God was going to win the battle for them. They had hope for the moment that they were not going to fall powerless. They were not going to go down without a fight now because they had water. But there was still a battle to be fought. But their pathway became clearer because they got hope as they worshiped. You know, I like to lay out a plan that I can logically follow through in my mind. This is how it's going to work. I'm going to do this, and then this result's going to happen, then we'll do this. And those things are right and good at times. But when we're in the walk of faith, and we don't know what's going to happen next, We don't know what to expect next. You know, we can read this story, and we know exactly what the ending. You all that are familiar with the story, you knew what was going to happen before we ever read those verses, because we read it before. And we can look at this host and say, well, you know, your problem's going to be mapped out. It's going to be cleaned up here real shortly. God's going to respond, and this is all going to work out. But in their situation, put yourself in their situation. The walk of faith takes snatches of confirmation here and there. And gives us the hope, and it also confirms in our hearts that we are doing the will of the Almighty. The pathway becomes clearer during times of worship. Number four, somewhat similar. Faith accepts the progress even though the answer is not entirely revealed. They got the progress of water, even though they did not have the battle was not won yet. You know, they set out on this mission to conquer Moab, but they could have said, when God gave them water, they could have said, well, this isn't beating Moab. This isn't winning the battle with Moab. What do we want water for? But no, we say that is foolish, because physically they really needed water. They were parched. They're in great need of water. My point is, there are times when we're praying about something in the life of faith where we want to conquer Moab, but God chooses to give us an answer or direction in a way we didn't plan for, in a way we didn't expect, a way we don't expect. God gives us small answers or nudges, like I put it, but let's be careful that we don't cast them off as something that we didn't want. You know, I think of the man Naaman. He would have died a leper. He was nudged more than once. He got direction from Gehazi, and he said, "Fooey with this. We got rivers over in my land that are much better than that dirty river." But then his men said, "Yes, but Naaman." Naaman would have died a leper if he had not taken the nudges, the direction that God gave him. So it is for us. Not that we may die, but we may lose blessing in the walk of faith if we choose just cast something off when God has given us direction. And number five, faith takes what I'm facing and places it in the hands of the Almighty. You know, they trusted. They dug those ditches. That was an act of trust, an act of faith, and God filled those ditches. And he said, "I'm going to deliver them into your hands." They did not even have to wait to figure out. Yes, they did have to wait, but they didn't have to decide, well, now we got a good drink, now we're ready to go move forward. No, I think by that time, the army of Moab, of the Moabites, was charging down across that mountainside, that hill, coming down to the group, and they saw it all unfolding before them. Here comes the Moab with all their guards down. If you're going to take spoil, if you're going out to take spoil, do you think you're going to carry your shield and your sword with you? Probably not. They probably cast them off on a heap, and they charged down, and they were powerless. They had no weapons with them, and I'm sure the Israelites and the folks of Judah and Edom saw this powerless army coming, and they could see it right before them. God was delivering them into their hands. But they had placed their life in the hands of the Almighty, and they and their situation, and faith unties the strings. It detaches itself from it. When we're in the heat of the test, it's difficult to do this, but we may need to do it over and over again and surrender to God, to Jesus. He says, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." If you are labor, it means if you feel fatigue, he says, "Give it to me." If you're laden down with anxiety of your situation, that's what heavy laden means. It means the word anxiety. If you're weighed down, if you're anxious, if you're weighed down with anxiety, he says, "Just give it to me. I will give you rest. I will give you refreshment," is what that word means, rest. We cannot afford to lose the peace of right now or to sell our future reward on the auction block of control. And I guess that probably is for myself, because I like to be in control. But the walk of faith, while it leads out, like I said, it's a paradox. While we need to lead out on the one hand, we need to let go on the other. We cannot afford to lose that peace of right now following God by trying to keep control. Letting go means allowing providence to reveal the steps. I think that at least one or two of you have heard me share this story before, but I'm going to share it again. There's a song in your books, 749, "Would you live for Jesus and be always pure and good? Would you walk with him within the narrow road? Would you have him bear your burden, carry all your load? Let him have his way with thee. Would you have him make you free and follow at his call? Would you know the peace that comes by giving all? Would you have him save you so that you need never fall? Let him have his way with thee. Would you in his kingdom find a place of constant rest? Would you prove him true each providential test? Would you in his service labor always at your best? Let him have his way with thee." Those words were written by Mr. Nussbaum after he went through a situation where God did not answer the way he wanted him to answer. He had it planned out in his mind, so to speak, how God should answer his situation. Let me quickly read this account. This is Mr. Nussbaum's account following the first year of his ministry. "I had spent my first year in pastoral work, having been appointed to serve as pastor in one of the poorest circuits in our district. I had struggled hard during the year to take care of the 7 preaching places and congregations." Okay, you understand his plight? Perhaps most of you have never been a preacher, but I'm going to tell you what. 7 of them, without God, would be impossible. He had struggled to take care of these 7 preaching places and congregations. "It had been a most difficult task, strenuous and discouraging, and the income pitifully small. At the end of the conference year," this is in the Methodist church, they got together annually in their conference to get their assignments. "At the end of the conference year, my wife and I gathered our few necessary belongings, and with the assistance of one of our church members, we arrived at the railroad station in order to take the train to the place where the conference was to meet that year. Naturally, we had prayed and hoped that, at the conference, I might be appointed to a better charge. But when the bishop read the appointments the last night of the conference, I was named as pastor of the same old circuit. It was with heavy hearts that we repaired to our lodging place that night. Mrs. Nussbaum sensibly retired early, but I remained in the little parlor with no one to disturb me. I was very unhappy, and a spirit of rebellion seemed to possess me. About midnight, I finally knelt in prayer beside my chair. After some struggle, a deep peace came stealing into my heart. I told the Lord that I would be willing to let him have his way with me regardless of the cost. With that feeling of surrender to the will of God came the inspiration for the song now so well known throughout Christendom." Does that make any more sense? When you read all those questions in that song? "Let him have his way with thee." That is my challenge to us this morning. If you want all those things, all those words in that song, you're not going to get it without letting Jesus have his way with you. Only the surrendered heart gets the results in the life of faith. There are rewards in the journey. We already touched on them. There's a peace and serenity that you will get nowhere else. The army got an answer to their prayers, so we do in the life of faith. But it also gives us a testimony. We got to read the testimony of Mr. Nussbaum and many others. We got to read the testimony of this army here in 2 Kings chapter 3. We have a testimony to share with others in the life of faith as we surrender to it. By faith and through faith, we will arrive at the ultimate reward, which was the reason for our life of faith all along. Let's kneel for prayer.